Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Talking About a Revolution, a Revolutionary Girl Utena podcast, where each week we discuss two episodes of a 90s anime classic and whatever other random stuff we happen to think about. Just a quick reminder, we are an E for Explicit podcast, so listener discretion is advised. I am your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by my wonderful co-host, Austin. Hello, Austin.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you believe I'm stopped up again?
I can believe it because I also am stopped up.
It's the allergies. It's the spring season, the hay fever.
This is so bad. I used to feel so superior as a kid because I was like, I don't have allergies. And now I'm just like all the rest.
Yeah, this is recent. I used to only have summer allergies and I did not have spring allergies. Here it is March and I have such bad allergies.
I think also there's just been a marked shift in the way things are in the world, and I think the pollen's way worse than it's ever been.
God, everything's getting worse. Nothing's getting better.
Nope. It's so bad.
So let's go back in time to the 90s when things were better.
Oh my God, I love the 90s. That's actually not true,
but still.
Well, we can look back on the 90s with rose-colored glasses.
Hey, rose-colored glasses. Love it.
We're coming up roses this week, guys. Let's talk about the 90s. The 90s is one of the best eras. It's got the best music. Love the 90s and some of the best anime shows.
Let's talk about this. Let's talk about Revolutionary Girl Utena. Let's talk about you and me.
Oh my God.
Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things.
I'm so sorry. What are you doing? I was distracted. There's a squirrel. Oh my God. He's looking right in here.
Through the window.
He's on the side of the wall.
Inside or outside?
Well, he's outside of my apartment, but he's scaling the wall like some kind of James Bond character. He's staring at me. Oh my God, that's so scary. Okay.
Wave hello. Hello, squirrel.
I don't want to give him ideas. Okay. Okay. Sorry about that. I ruined your song.
No, it's okay. I can't sing for shit. Especially not when I'm all stubbed up like this for no goddamn reason.
Yeah, it's such a sad thing. I'm sorry. I hope your nasal sinuses drain soon.
I gotta get one of those, what do they call them? Kettle pots?
Oh, the idea of those things make me so nervous because I don't want to get like a brain-eating amoeba or something. Where were we? What were we even talking about?
Revolutionary Girl Utena.
Revolutionary Girl Utena.
Sorry, it is Utena, right?
That's how they said it in the show.
All right, if that's how they said it, that's how we're going to say
Utena,
it.
Utena, Utena, whatever.
Utena.
Utena.
So we're watching the dub, right?
That's what I watched.
We're watching the English dub, starring the late, great Rachel Lillis.
Which I didn't realize was her until you told me that, and I was blown away because she's such a talent. You wouldn't be able to tell that she voiced Utena versus, like, some other well-known characters from other 90s anime.
Yeah, Rachel Lillis is here. She's joined by some other prominent voice actors, such as James Carter Cathcart, Lisa Ortiz, Dan Green.
Well, that's really interesting.
Ted Lewis was in this.
Who, what now?
Ted Lewis is also in this.
And he is prominently who in what other anime?
Giovanni.
Oh my God. Giovanni.
I mean, who's that?
What?
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that character is.
We're not talking about that. Mm-mm. So what do we know about this show? I think we should share our experiences with this show.
Okay, you've been trying to get me to watch the show for like 15 years.
Forever.
Why? What's your reasoning for that?
Okay, I think there was a period of time in, I think it had to have been either the late 90s, probably more towards like the early aughts, where all these big anime shows were coming out over here, and I very distinctly remember reading like Shonen Jump magazine back in the day.
Nerd.
I know, nerd. Well, okay, the thing to know about this is, one, reading Sonic Archie comics on the floor of the grocery store. And of course, they had those magazines there as well. But I think I had a subscription or at least like a trial subscription to it at some point because my father used to work in a business where he could get like gaming magazines every now and then. He would obviously give me whatever he got and be like, here you go. Here's this gaming thing or like, you know, demo CD or whatever. I guess I just had a trial of this magazine at one point, but I very specifically remember reading like, oh, here comes Naruto, like, before that came out, and, like, later on, Bobobo.
Oh my God.
I know. And then I think this was a feature in one of the magazines, so ever since I saw it, I was just hooked. I was like, what is this? It's so interesting.
Yeah, my understanding is this is like a truly a classic.
Yeah, it's a beloved show, very far-reaching and inspired by a lot of things, which I'm very eager to talk about because I want to kind of get thoughts on that.
I would love to hear your background knowledge. But my knowledge of this show is simply that it's so huge and so influential and so beloved. And so I started to watch this once upon a time during like finals week or something.
College?
Yeah. So like a long time ago. And so I got like maybe a third of the way through it, but I was distracted by, you know, life, school, stuff. So I never finished it. But I've always wanted to. So I'm really glad we're taking the time to actually do this.
How far did you get? Do you remember?
Like 10 episodes-ish.
So you really didn't get past the first arc?
No, I did not. I don't even know what's past the first arc.
Okay. I'm not 100% certain either. Any experience I've had with this is similar to yours in that it's like, okay, only the first few chapters of like the manga and not necessarily watching the show, but I never got past anything in like the first arc. So I'm not really sure what the overall story entails and how it ends. I guess maybe this is something we can continue on.
Maybe.
I mean,
we have a whole podcast about this show. So
I know. Gosh, we have all the time in the world to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Without further ado, we can jump into some background on...
Yeah, I want to hear this.
What exactly this show is. I don't have a ton of background, and honestly, like, I would encourage you guys to go out and look into some of this stuff more deeply, because when I started digging surface level into some of the inspiration and background of production of this show, it's a lot. It's a lot, and I don't want to go into, like, a whole, like, novelization of this, so...
I mean, I went into this without doing any research whatsoever. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Surprise me.
Well, that's fine, too. I mean, honestly, I didn't know a whole lot of the foundational background. Like, I was like, okay, I do remember some of the characters. Like, I remember Utena. I remember Anthy and a few of the other characters, too. But, like, beyond that, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know. The show was created, and I thought this was interesting because, like, normally when you think about, like, an anime, or at least... This is my limited experience. Maybe some people out there feel differently, and maybe this isn't as rare as I'm making it out to be. Normally, when I think of an anime, I think of one person creating it, or like a manga. You've got a singular individual who creates the show, and then with the help of like a team later on, you know, once it becomes popular, they start going into production of it. But this was created by a production group called B-Papas. I think I'm saying that right.
I was wondering what the hell that was. I saw that on the credits, and I was like, what?
Yeah, so this is a collection of folks who worked in different capacities on different animes and things like that, and they all came together to form this one production collective of people. So I thought that was an interesting fact. So it was formed by a man named Kunihiko Ikuhara. He's the director. And he used to be, at one point in time, the director of the TV anime adaptation of Sailor Moon.
Okay, I was wondering about that, because it's very Sailor Moon.
Yes.
Yeah, very Sailor Moon.
So you'll see, and I'm sure as I say these things, you'll probably be like, oh my god, I can absolutely see the inspiration for this because of that. Mr. Ikuhara was frustrated by the lack of the creative control that he had in directing an adapted work, so like something that was already done. And he was just making it into a TV show. So he left.
That's interesting to me because the Sailor Moon anime is so different from the Sailor Moon manga.
This is all from Wikipedia. So all my information's coming from here. And of course, like I said, it's a lot of background. And I only kind of picked out some highlights. I'm not giving the entire full context. But I hope you can get the gist of it from this little blurb. So he left that job and conceived Utena as a mainstream shoujo anime to rival Sailor Moon. He was like, I'm going to do my own thing and leave and kind of create something else that could be like a powerhouse mainstream show. So I guess at one point, the direction of it, like artistically and just the feel of it, was going to be way more like Magical Girl and kind of that Sailor Moon-esque type of production. But at some point, it really drastically shifted from like that mainstream feel to more avant-garde and surrealistic. Which I'm sure you could definitely tell that watching these couple episodes.
Yeah.
It's very... And I'm going to talk a little bit about this too, and I'm sure you'll have thoughts on it as well, but I was in love with this. The overall visual style, the art, just everything about it is so different and unique. I loved it. Another interesting thing that I read was that the visual style of this anime is characterized by a theatrical presentation and staging. It's very much like a play, stage production.
Does it have anything to do with that all-female production company?
It does.
That I can't remember the name of?
It absolutely does. It was inspired by the all-female Japanese theater troupe, Takahara Zuka Revue, founded in 1913. So yes, you're absolutely right. Another thing that you might find interesting, Austin, is that in addition to Sailor Moon, a lot of the members that comprise this B-Papa's company worked on another show called Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Yeah, I got that vibe for sure.
Could you feel it?
I could feel it, because this is post-Ava.
Yeah.
It felt very similar in some aspects to me.
There were certain visual elements and overall feel to Utena that I was like, this is Ava for sure. Like, this feels so weird enough. You're like, definitely inspired by Ava. Also, in addition to that, some other notable inspirations include Japanese graphic artist Junichi Nakahara, a Herman Hesse novel, Demian, and the 1973 film adaptation of The Three Musketeers.
Oh, yeah.
And that is all I have, but I think a lot of this inspiration is very apparent. And I loved it. I think it's very unique.
For sure. Like, the character design, the backgrounds, everything's just so... It's like a painting.
It really is. It's very artistic. And I know we're going to talk about this when we jump into the episodes proper, but, like, the architecture, the backgrounds, the world itself, it's very interesting. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's so weird. It's bizarre.
It's rare that we talk about things that are, like, actually, like, have artistic merit. It's funny. It's a nice change of pace.
You know, it's ultimately really interesting to think that, okay, this particular anime has a ton of artistic inspiration that it's pulling from, but then it goes on to become so influential in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's a pretty great accomplishment.
I mean, only one story. We can only create what we've been influenced by, and it just continues forever.
That's true. That's a good point. I guess it's a matter of just taking the inspiration and putting it just enough of a unique spin on it to make it its own notable thing. But, like, the influences that we talked about are definitely there. There's several instances where I'm like, okay, there's the Sailor Moon. There's the Ava influence. Like, it's absolutely prevalent. But I think we'll talk a lot about that as we get into the actual episode, because I want to get your thoughts on things as they happen.
Okay, great. Let's get into the two episodes we watched this
week. Yes. The first one is like The Rose Bride.
And the second one, carrying the theme, is For Whom the Rose Smiles.
Ooh.
All right. So I have the choo-choo coin here.
The choo-choo coin.
Yeah, the choo-choo coin. And I'm going to flip it and it's going to tell us who's going to do what.
Okay.
Heads. I'm doing the 30-second summary.
Yes,
indeed. And you'll do the full episode, which I think you kind of wanted to do the first episode anyway.
I might have.
I think you might have. All right, let's do this.
But I abide by the choo-choo coin, as always. All right, Austin, in 3, 2, 1, go.
So we are at a very fancy school in a very crazy castle town, and Utena is here, and she is our main character. And she is really cool and athletic, and everyone loves her, especially all the girls who have crushes on her. And she sees Anthy, and Anthy gets slapped by her boyfriend, and Utena's like, oh, that's not good. And so she ends up challenging the guy who slapped her, but because he was mean to her friend, Wakaba. And then they have a duel and, like, a magic kingdom.
Time.
That was hard.
That was... that.
I did a bad job.
There was a lot going on, and honestly, I think the way they frame this is quite different than maybe what we're used to seeing.
We're used to seeing very simple narratives,
yeah, very simple narrative, very straight to the point. But it seems like there's a lot going on in this world. I have a lot of questions about this world.
Me too.
Holy shit, this is crazy.
This is fun. I'm just going to kind of break character for a second. Sure. This is fun because we've never done something like this where we've never seen it before.
Exactly.
Or at least not seen it all the way through. So it's like, we don't know what's going on. We can't hint at anything because we genuinely don't know.
And we'll do our very best to talk you through this and give our best summary of it. So, all right, where do we even begin?
With the prince.
The prince. Like all good fairy tale stories, because this is very heavily rooted in fairy tales, as I'm sure you will see. But we begin with a story of a little princess who once upon a time was extremely heartbroken and sad because her parents passed away. We don't know how or why, but it seemed like a tragic event. A prince comes to this princess one day, and he has a very distinct smell of roses. And I kind of just want to pause right here because this was giving me so, like, Samurai Champloo vibes. Like, the samurai that smelled of sunflowers.
I've never seen that.
You've never seen that? Oh, dang.
Like, it was on, but I didn't, like, actively seek it out.
I watched it all the way through Once Upon a Time. Don't ask me the details because this was literally, like, 10 or 15 years ago. But anyway. So, this prince comes to her one day on a white steed and he smells like roses. And he dries her tears, like a prince does, and tells her to never lose her strength and nobility, because she's a princess. And he gives her a ring, looks like a signet ring with a rose seal on it. And she thinks to herself, perhaps this is an engagement ring. Can't be sure. But she vows to become a prince herself, because she's so inspired by him, even though this may not be the best idea for her to do this.
Sounds like a good fucking idea to me.
I know. So, flash forward several years into the future. And we're in the present day, and we are in this town, this world. I have zero context for what the hierarchy is here, what the situation is here, but it seems like they're at an academy.
It's not grounded at all. It's very, no. We're in a magical Disney movie.
Yes. And it's actually interesting to me because I always got this feeling, like even right off the bat, where it's like, do these people exist outside of this school? We don't see, like, other anime where, you know, the students go back home and it's kind of like a slice of life and we see that they have normal, everyday people lives outside of this school. It doesn't seem to be the case in this particular anime. Like, they exist in this school and this school is, like, it is a school, but it's not a school. I don't know what the hell is happening here.
It's, like, a super affluent boarding school.
Okay.
That's also, like, a castle.
Yes. It's like a palatial estate of epic proportions. And I just want to hit the brakes a little bit here, too, because I want to talk about the architecture, the style,
okay. The
backgrounds. What did you think about this? It's so different than anything.
I couldn't even, like, imagine walking around and being like, wow, look at these enormous structures everywhere.
This, I had to Google it because I was so interested. And I honestly wish that Josh was here because he is very much into architecture. So he could have probably given me a whole lot of background on this. But I had to Google like what the influence of the architectural style of art was. It seems to be kind of a blend of things. An Art Nouveau style blended with surrealist, almost impossible design.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost kind of like M.C. Escher in a way. It almost seems impossible in some regards. Like, there's no way you could actually build a structure like this.
Like, I could see her turning a corner and you're at the Escher stairs.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, okay, I gotta go to the class. And she just, like, walks through the stairs like that.
It doesn't even faze her.
That's the vibe we got going here.
So, we meet our main character, Utena Tenjo, who is currently being confronted on her choice of uniform by this very severe-looking woman who I'm guessing is, like, a teacher. And she is being called out by this teacher because she's opting to wear the black boy uniform of this school versus, like, the mint green and white girl uniform of the school.
Which, this threw me, because she's wearing the boy's top.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't see anyone else wear this outfit that she's wearing, the boy's outfit.
Maybe it's, like, an alternative outfit?
Sionji wears something very similar to it, but it's with a different color palette.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, the school council wears this uniform.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of the students appear to be wearing a different uniform.
Yeah, it is really interesting. She does stand out. It's definitely against regulation.
Is she wearing shorts or a skirt?
She's wearing shorts. She's wearing, like, red bicycle shorts, almost.
I can't imagine that's regulation.
I don't think Utena really gives a shit about
rules. She does not care. If I was a teacher trying to get her in trouble, that's what I would clock. I'd be like, okay, you're not wearing the pants, though, so it doesn't count.
Yeah. But Utena's somebody, obviously, we see very anti-establishment, and she's like, I'm going to do whatever I want. I thought it's interesting because even, like, the girls' uniform, like, everything about this anime is very exaggerated. The way the characters are drawn, the way the outfits are drawn, like, could you imagine wearing the girls' uniform with those giant, poofy sleeves?
They were wild. They were so wild.
And honestly, to give a visual for, like, everybody who's thinking of this, it kind of gave me, like English monarchy. I'm sure there's, like, a word for the style of clothing that Utena is wearing, but, like, think of, like, Prince William's outfit that he wore at the royal wedding or something.
Like the red thing. Yeah.
Except for she's wearing, like, black. But, like, all the other characters, like, they have those, oh my god, what are they called? Like, epaulettes? Those, like, shoulder things with the fur that kind of hangs down, or the tassels that hang down, and, like, the little cords that kind of clip onto the front of the breast pocket. Like, I don't know. And it's honestly a choice that the dress code is so, like, regal and affluent. Like, I want more information on this academy. Like, what the hell is this school?
Yeah, let's get some info on, like, the normal students. I like how it's, like, scene one, episode one, and we're like, tell us the lore. Tell us about the other people.
I'm not really sure if we... Maybe I'm wrong, because, again, we haven't gotten very far into this overall, but, like, I wonder if we get lore on these other students, or if it's just expected that they all kind of live in this sort of affluent fantasy world. Like, are there normal people, or are these the normal people? Like, I don't know.
Like, what's Wakaba's story?
Yeah.
Well, she's not very normal, is she? She's
no.
She's kind of odd. She's an odd duck.
We'll talk a little bit more about Wakaba in 1 second.
Okay.
But anyway, so Utena's like, nope, I'm not listening to this. She pulls out her little student manual handbook there, and she's like, well, I don't see anything on this, so I guess I'm good to wear this. Goodbye.
Badass moment.
I know. She's such a badass. Love her already.
There's nothing in the rule book saying I can't wear a boy's uniform. Goodbye.
I love how she just, like, spun that right back, and she's like, well, give it a taste of your own medicine. There's nothing here, so I guess you can't enforce that rule.
Even though those short shorts are not regulation. I'm sorry.
Okay, so there's a lot about this school that I don't think is, like, normal or regulation, but I think the shorts are the least of the problems of this world, but we'll get there. Anyway, so we see her kind of doing normal school activities a little bit later. She single-handedly, continuing her badassery, by the way, she single-handedly wins a basketball game against the entire boys' team, which I thought was, like, freaking awesome. And, of course, she's flooded with the adoration from all the fellow girl classmates who are just standing there.
Sapphic right from the jump.
I know. I kind of thought it was funny, too, that all the girls are sitting there in their actual school uniforms. They didn't even bother to change into their basketball uniforms because they're like, oh, Utena's got this. We don't even have to play.
Oh, this was a girls versus boys game?
It seemed like it should
have been. Utena's like, y'all just sit down. I got this.
Yeah, I guess. They're just sitting there watching. Nobody else was on the girls' team.
Well, it's not very sportsmanlike. Let the girls play, Utena.
Maybe they didn't want to. Maybe she was like, okay, well, if you guys want to sit out, I'll do it, I guess.
I just kind of assumed it was like we missed a scene where, like, the boys' team was like, Utena, you can't beat all of us. We're all going to challenge you. We're all going to have a basketball game with you. Even though that's not how basketball works.
No.
And she was like, okay, I'm on. Let's do it.
She never backs down from a challenge, as we'll see. Suffice it to say, she's a certified badass. She wins single-handedly without even really breaking a sweat. So later on, she's walking past... Okay, this is another example of interesting architecture. She's like in this inner courtyard area, internal courtyard, but there's like a open ceiling. In the middle of it, there's this huge glass birdcage-looking conservatory. Inside the birdcage-looking thing is a purple-haired girl, and she's watering the roses. Utena's watching this. She's like, oh, interesting. She sees her, this purple-haired girl, talking to a man, and initially thinks that this is a lover's quarrel. But things get kind of insane and scary when he straight up backhands her across the face.
Yep.
And we actually see it. Like, I know a lot of anime kind of cuts away anytime there's, like, a physical altercation, and you kind of really get the implication that they had a fight, but they don't really show it. He fucking slaps her in the face. I was like, oh my god.
I think Utena had a very understated reaction to this.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine seeing that and not being like, oh my god! Like, you'd be like, oh! Knowing her character, she would do something.
I think she kind of does, but before she can do anything, somebody else comes in. But she doesn't really, like, make a move to, like, jump down there or whatever. I don't know what I would do. If I saw somebody do that in real life, I would be flabbergasted.
I imagine it'd be shocking. It's, like, you'd be like, what? What? Did I see that right? Like, what?
Exactly. You couldn't imagine your eyes, right? So another guy, thankfully, has appeared on scene and grabs the man's hand and keeps him from slapping her a second time. Anyway, so we learn from Wakaba, who is her fellow classmate and friend, and she's a normal girl because she has brown hair, and as we know, when you have brown hair in an anime like this, you're just a normal, everyday person, not destined for anything great.
Yeah, you didn't come out of the womb with a full head of pink hair.
Yeah, Udna has, like, bubblegum pink hair, by the way. Anthy has, like, violet-purple hair, and these two guy characters that we have just been introduced to, the slapper, he has very green, like, foresty green hair. His name is Sionji, and he is the vice president of the student council body. And then we have a very orange, pumpkin orange-haired guy named Toga, I believe, and he is the student council president. And if you can't already tell, the student council, very enigmatic, but they're going to be very important. And apparently they rule the roost around here.
Thank God for Wakaba, exposition machine.
Love her.
She just comes up and she's like, I know who these people are. I know what's up.
She's got her finger on the pulse of the gossip at this place. Anyway, so she also explains that the girl's name is Anthy Himeya. Is that how she said it?
Sure.
She's a shy girl who keeps the conservatory and likes to water the flowers. Later on, we're in a different place now, and we see a group of very fancy-looking people. These are the rest of the student council, presumably. They all wear this signet ring, like Sionji was wearing, and it has a rose seal on it.
Just like Utena's rose seal ring.
Yeah, there's a connection. How unusual. There. Very unusual. They are currently admonishing Sionji for his treatment of his bride / fiance. This is where things get really interesting, and I'm going to try my very best to explain this shit because it started to get complicated.
And also, we don't know the context. We don't know what the hell's going on.
No, we don't. And also, like, if you've seen Evangelion, this gave me huge Evangelion vibes, this part right here.
Yeah, the talking monoliths start having this conversation.
Yeah. What are they called in Eva, the group?
Sele.
Sele, that's right. Okay, so this is like the shadowy organization that we haven't actually seen. We have no context for them at all. But basically, the student council at this academy exists only by the will of something called the end of the world.
Of course.
Of course. What the fuck? Okay, of course. Anthy also displays some concerning behavior, and they're like, why are you doing this? And because anytime she's like in her subservient fiance mode, she calls the person that she's bound to master or whatever.
This is what happens when we don't understand Japanese honorifics and they're very awkward to translate into English.
Yeah. So we're kind of just like, ooh, ew.
We're missing some subtleties here.
Sure. So Wakaba, meanwhile, we don't see this happening, but she is apparently in love with Sionji, even though Sionji's a problematic person.
Wakaba's so weird, because she's in love with Sionji, but she, like, really projects, like, a, I'm in love with Utena. Utena is my boyfriend, and I'm just in love with her, and no one could ever stand between us, and she's my destined partner. But, like, it's all a facade?
Yeah, I don't...
She's being silly?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe she's kind of just being silly, like, oh, you're my best friend, I love you so much, you're my true love, oh! But she also exhibits love and adoration for other male characters, too, so...
Like, she has an actual crush on a guy.
I don't know, it's interesting. I guess she can love more than one person.
It's playing into Utena being a prince of it all.
Yeah.
Like, she has all the girls in the school eating out of her hand.
You know what it reminds me of also? I don't think you've ever watched Fruits Basket, but...
I have not.
It's very much like Prince Yuki, like the main character, and it's like that whole stereotype of like, oh, the most handsome boy in school. He's like the prince, and that's how he treats all the girls, like very respectfully, and like everybody's in love with him, and he's like far and away more beautiful than all the other boys in the school. Like, I don't know, it's like, it kind of gives that kind of vibe.
But Utna's a girl.
But she that's is a girl. Cool. But she wants to be a prince, and she exhibits all these princely qualities and very respectful of the girls, and everybody loves her, so.
Very gender fucky. Very subversive.
Sometime off screen, Wakaba has written a love letter to Sionji. I guess she doesn't care that Sionji is an abusive, like, woman beater, but, like.
Well, I don't think she saw that.
Yeah, but Utna didn't say, like, oh, and he slapped the shit out of Anthy, like.
Yeah, I know. Utna needs to be saying some shit. She needs to be like, that guy is, like, slapping people. Like,
yeah.
He's trouble.
He's trouble and you need to stay away. Anyway, she leaves him a love letter somewhere. I guess she sent it to him personally, proclaiming her love for him. But Sionji responds in a very shitty way and takes her letter, her private letter, and posts it on the public school bulletin board for everyone to read. And of course, all the boys are gathered around this bulletin board and they're reading it out loud, making fun of the writer of this letter. And she sees this and is devastated.
That felt real.
Yeah.
That was like real bullying happening.
Oh, poor Wakaba.
In this very fantastical setting.
Yeah.
But I don't think her name was attached to it, because no one said Wakaba wrote this. She just knows.
She knows because it's her letter.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone knows who wrote it.
Right. But she's mortified. She runs off crying, and Utna vows to make Sionji pay for this transgression. So she seeks him out and finds him in his kendo dojo, because he's the captain of the kendo team. And she's just like, hey, you're the team captain, right? Well, I'm going to challenge you to a kendo duel. And kendo is just like a kind of a martial art where they use like wooden swords and stuff. But he mistakes her as the duel challenger that they were discussing. The student council was discussing an upcoming duel challenger that would duel Sionji for Anthy's hand as the rose bride.
Totally normal stuff.
Utna's just there for like her friend's honor and's like, oh yeah, I'll just, you know, meet you after school on the kendo dojo stage and we'll just kind of have a little practice duel. But he's thinking that she's like the rose bride challenger, and she's like, what are you talking about? That's weird. I'm just here for the kendo thing.
I will say, having him in a kendo match is also not a very effective method of dealing with this guy. I'm just saying. No. But I guess all she knows is like sports. She's like, I'm going to embarrass this guy.
You know, like another lesser known anime where they use creatures to fight their problems out. This world, apparently, they use duels to fight out their problems.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, he's like, okay then, duel challenger, come meet me at the Secret Forest Arena tomorrow after class. And she's like, aren't we not supposed to go to the Secret Forest Arena? It's like kind of the Harry Potter Forbidden Forest, like, do not go there kind of thing.
It's the Secret Forest Arena, not the everyone come on and hang out in the Forest Arena.
This place is so weird. It's so fucking strange. Okay. I like the kind of interludes that they have, because again, like we discussed at the beginning, it's very theatrical in its presentation. So there's kind of like an intermission little scene where we have the shadows from like these girls in the school, and they're like, oh my god, did you hear? Did you hear? A duel. Like, how would you describe that?
It's an intermission. We're setting up the next scene, so here's the shadow puppets who are gonna be the Greek chorus.
Yeah.
Normal stuff.
Exactly. Well, it's framed as like an opera or theatrical production, so we have this interlude, and now we're here at the Secret Forest Arena. She tries to get in. It's a very Art Nouveau kind of, again, another impossible architecture of like huge stone wall with like this relief of like a rose carved into the front, and there's like a handle that has a small pool that defies gravity. When she pulls the handle, the water from this little pool splashes up and hits the ring, and it opens up the secret passageway. Very magical, very fantasy.
Everything that happens now is what I remember vividly about this show from really? Watching it a long time ago. Yeah.
Okay, that's very interesting. This I did not remember. How do you even describe this next part? She walks into this, like, massive spiral staircase area.
This shit's iconic.
It is iconic.
Oh my god, the stairs.
There's like a song that plays, and this happens every episode, I believe, where it's kind of like this epic sort of beginning to this duel, and she's walking up the stairs backed by this like musical opera kind of song.
Crazy song. Crazy.
What about, give me your thoughts on the song.
I couldn't even pay attention to the lyrics because I was so like enthralled by this.
The lyrics are insane.
I was enraptured. This is the transformation sequence, basically.
Yeah, this is the Sailor Moon adjacent, like, she's becoming the duelist and, like, making her way up to this battlefield.
I'm sure they had to do for budget reasons.
Yeah.
But, damn, they went for it. And, like, it's the craziest thing, because she's walking up some stairs. But you would think it's, like, the most epic thing that's ever happened in the history of the world.
But it really sets the stage for the tone of the show, and also, like, the fact that it's this kind of, like, operatic Japanese lyrics against, like, I mean, we're watching the English dub, so it's kind of this very epic feeling against something like that.
It's so jarring too, because it starts,
yeah,
out of nowhere. It's like, whoa.
Whoa. She goes up this impossible spirally staircase and ends up at the top of this like giant disc. Like, the disc is on top of the stairs, so she's on this like platform. Above this disc platform that she's standing on is a giant glass castle that's floating upside down, spinning above this arena. What the fuck?
I want to know. I know it's magical, but how far did she walk up the stairs? It looked like it was miles above the ground as she walked. It's a good thing she's like the most athletic person to ever live, because I could not walk that far. I would be winded as shit.
Exactly. And also just, it's hard to imagine this visually, I know. She's in a forest, right? She goes up the staircase. You don't see the staircase from the ground. Like, it's hidden or something. And then you end up in this, like, otherworldly plane. Like, it's very much, like, clouds everywhere in this, like, dreamlike scape with this floating glass castle with lights all over it, like, spinning upside down above your head. Like, it's so bizarro.
And she's like, huh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, she's like, oh, I've never seen that before. Yeah. Huh.
All right.
Interesting.
Whatever.
So Anthy's here, and she's dressed in a very regal outfit. She places a rose on Utena's breast pocket and explains to her that the rules of the duel state that if the rose is knocked off of her lapel pocket, the duel is over and she loses. But if she gets to knock the rose off of her opponent's breast pocket, then she wins. Seonji is here now, and he is confused why Utena has a rose seal ring if she is not a part of the student council body. And then he slaps Anthy again. This fucking guy. He's mad because Anthy wishes Utena luck. Utena, she does get mad at this part where she's like, how very dare you? But Anthy explains that he is the current champion duelist, and because of that reason, as the rose bride, she must do anything that he says. So she's basically kind of bound to whomever is the current champion. She's kind of like a familiar in that way. She's kind of like, I exist to serve you now. Like,
this is why we need to watch more of this, because I need to know exactly what's going on, right, with Anthy. What is happening? What's her story? What happened here? Mm-hmm. Who is she? What is going on?
What is her story? This is where it kind of surprised me, this part of it, because I had forgotten that there was an element of magic in this. I thought it was just very kind of, okay, I say that like there's not a giant floating glass castle and shit. Like, it's like magic in this show. Anyway, so she recites like this ancient incantation. We'd have another like magical girl, Sailor Moon-esque transformation where she summons a giant glowing orb from her chest, and Seonji comes over and pulls a whole fucking sword out of her chest.
I'm surprised you don't remember that. I feel like that's one of the most iconic parts of the show.
Yeah, so he pulls out this sword of Dios, that he calls it. It's a pretty regal-looking sword. It's got a gold sword guard, and forgive me, I don't know, like, all the sword terms and shit, but, like, the pommel of the sword has a rose thing on it. It's pretty cool-looking. And Utena's like, huh, I wasn't expecting that. That's fucking strange that you pulled a sword out of her chest.
She doesn't react at all.
She's aware she lives in a world that's, like, magical.
Fantastical,
yeah. It doesn't faze her. She's like, huh.
In a second, she's gonna say, like, oh, that trick sword. So she thinks it's, like, this is all, like, theatrics,
oh, I guess,
put on for her. She's like, you guys are just wild. You guys would loot anything for the drama of it all.
And she's like, did I walk into, like, a stage play? Like, okay, that's fun. All right, I'll humor you, sure. So maybe she isn't so aware of, like, all this fantastic stuff. Maybe she's just kind of like, huh, all right, cool trick. I guess that's more of, like, the case because she doesn't really seem fazed by that, for one thing. And she brought her wooden training sword. Because remember, she challenges him thinking this is just, like, a for fun, for the honor of Anthe kind of silly duel. So she brings her wooden kendo dueling sword. And when they start getting into it, he easily breaks her sword because it's a real metal sword. And she's like, oh, wait, that's a real sword? What? So she's kind of surprised by this.
Just mildly surprised, though.
Mildly. Even though her sword is splintered into a bunch of little pieces, she wins. She wins, somehow. She manages to knock the flower off of Saionji's chest.
Because she's the best.
She is the best. Saionji is devastated and doesn't realize how this could happen. And Anthe is like, oh, great, wonderful. So by the way, I now belong to you. Because, you're the new Prince of the Rose Bride, I suppose. Meanwhile, Toga, who we remember from before, he's the orange pumpkin-haired guy that stopped Saionji from slapping her that first time. He's watching from some other floating structure somewhere with his little opera binoculars. And he's like, oh, baby, Utena, you've lit a fire in my heart. Oh, my God.
This guy's trouble.
This guy is trouble. I was not expecting him to be enthralled by her that way.
That was surprising to me.
That was very surprising. Sure. Oh, and he makes another concerning comment because, I'm not familiar with, like, Japanese schooling, the structure of that, but he calls her a middle schooler.
Yeah.
And
you know what she does not look like?
A middle schooler. Guys, just for reference, like, everybody in this world is, like, 7 feet tall.
Correct.
Utena is, like, a woman, drawn like a woman. I'm guessing that means, if he's referring to her as a middle schooler, does that mean he's a high schooler? Like,
aren't Japanese middle schools 7th, 8th, and 9th grade?
I'm looking it up right now.
So I'm assuming she's in 9th grade, but I would have guessed she was 18.
Okay, so in Japan, according to the AI overview.
Oh boy.
Actually, I'm going to scroll past that because, okay, this is the first result, and this may be slightly wrong, I don't know. It says from age 7 to age 12 is elementary school. From age 13 to age 15 is junior high. From age 16 to 18 is high school. And from age 19 to 22 is university.
I'm just going to pretend they're all 18.
So there, I'm going to just gloss over that part because she is not a middle schooler. So yeah, that's interesting. We kind of have now set the stage for whatever the fuck is happening with the student council and end of the world.
Wild. it's like what the hell is going on? You have to watch more to know what's going on.
This is such an interesting premise. Like, I have to know. It's like we talked about the whole Sele thing, the Evangelion, the robots. It's like, what the fuck is going on? I gotta know. Like, so we'll find out more.
We're gonna find out.
Yeah.
In this podcast, we got 37 episodes to go.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it.
Now let's flip the choo-choo coin. See who's going to go first in our MVP, LVP, and quote section. I am.
All right.
So my MVP, I'm going to give it to Wakaba.
Oh, okay.
You know, she took a very big risk in sending some random guy a love letter. And it didn't pan out like she wanted it to. But, you know, she was very confident in that. So I appreciate her for taking the initiative.
I know. It takes a lot of guts.
Also, Wakaba's weird as hell. So I kind of love her. She's the Naru, like the Sailor Moon parallels. Like, she's like the normal human friend.
Oh my God. Yeah.
She's here to give us some backstory on stuff, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. Maybe she has like a whole arc. I don't know.
I doubt it. Honestly, the vibe I'm getting, and I could be completely wrong, but I honestly don't think we're going to get a lot of like character background. Like, I think they just exist in this place and time, and whatever we learn from them. If we get any background, it's going to be on, like, Anthe and stuff. I don't think we're going to get, like, childhood anything from, like, anybody else.
Well, I think with Utena, we got to find out about the prince and her.
Yeah, maybe her with the parents and stuff, but yeah.
But, like, the background people, I don't think they have. Of course not.
No.
They don't have lives.
No,
they exist. Everyone's here to play a role in a fairy tale.
Yeah.
You don't hear the backstory of the huntsman from Snow White or something.
No, of course not. It's not relevant.
My LVP, is there any other choice but Seonji?
No, of course not.
Like, what even needs to be said?
Nothing.
Fuck that guy.
He's an abuser.
Okay, my quote, let's see.
God, were there any quotes?
There's a couple that I got.
Okay,
I'm going to give it to Utena's very understated reaction to when the stare sequence starts. Like, right before that starts, she says, oh, wow, this is some entrance.
Oh, wow.
Girl, this is a weird-ass situation. You're not behaving accordingly.
I mean, the world she lives in is weird, so.
Right, true, true.
Oh, okay, this is a tough one. My first instinct is to say my MVP is Utena, but I don't know. Do I want to be predictable like that, or... Oh, God, I don't know.
Well, who else would you give it to?
I was thinking Toga, but... He hasn't really done a whole lot yet. So, you know what? I'm gonna say Utena because it's the easy answer.
Right.
She's a badass. She is a anti-establishment kind of revolutionary figure, if you will.
Hey!
And she's not afraid to speak her mind and break the rules. Well, she's not really breaking any rules, is she? She does her thing and she's unapologetic about it. And I love that about her. She's very noble and... She seems like a good person deep down. So, she gets MVP. My LVP, this one's tough. Because, like, Seonji is the only asshole one. Who else is, like, around? I don't even know.
Oh, let's think about it. The boys laughing at Rukappa's letter.
Okay, I was literally about to say that. I think the boys make...
What the fuck is happening up there?
Oh my god, I can hear that. Are they dropping bowling balls on your ceiling?
Something's happening. I don't know what's going
on. Okay, Austin's neighbors get fucking LVP for being annoying as fuck. My unserious answer. My serious answer is the boys from the school who are being very horrible and rude and making a spectacle of this poor girl's letter and generally just being insufferable pricks. My quote, I didn't have but one. It's where Utena is confronting the school teacher and she pulls out her little school manual and says, I don't see any rule in here that says a girl can't wear a boy's uniform. Well, I guess that's that. See ya.
Get wrecked.
Get wrecked. And the lady doesn't even have a comeback, so I guess it worked.
This is how you know it's a fairy tale, because in real life she would get like in trouble for talking back or whatever.
Yeah, bullshit. Of course. She's
whatever they can pull out to be like, I don't like your tone.
It's kind of one of those, like, I mean, I guess with any anime or whatever, it's kind of like the kids and the students have the free reign over the school and like the teachers and or authority figures kind of are secondary. Like in a lot of anime, even the teachers defer to the students. Like they're so in love with the students themselves too, which is problematic, but they kind of defer to them like in the hierarchy. They're like, oh yeah, like so-and-so is so popular and cool. Yeah, okay.
Are we ready for episode 2?
Oh my good God. I can try.
All right. Let's do a 30-second summary. Starting 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so it's the next day. Things are back to normal, seemingly. Unbeknownst to Utena, the student council's meeting again to discuss yesterday's events, and they say some pretty wacky shit. Meanwhile, somehow, Utena and Wakaba are going to live in the dorms now. Utena gets assigned to a singleton dorm, like she thinks, but apparently Anthy has moved in, and she's like, I love you, I'm your bride now, I gotta live with you. Seonji challenges Utena to another duel, and even though she was gonna lose, she wins anyway.
Time. You did a much better job than I did.
Oh my goodness, I wouldn't say that. That was very surface level, but thank you.
It's okay. Okay, first of all, can we talk about the opening?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm just saying, I love how the opening's very, like, in your face. This is a lesbian show.
It's very sapphic, yes.
Yes, you're going to have to deal with that because we're going for it in this show.
Utena's an icon.
I also love the sequence where Utena and Anthy are wearing armor and they're sitting on flying horses with lances and they're like zooming through the sky. And I'm like, that shit better happen. I want that to actually...
I know. Are there actually like Pegasus in this show? Like, I mean, if Anthy could get a sword pulled out of her chest, then potentially...
Yeah, I want to see the two of them going into battle.
I know. That's like a
couple. That'd be so cool.
Power couple, ultimate medieval armor, warrior power couple. That's awesome.
Oh, man. All right, so now into the episode. Utena comes to class, and her fangirls are blushing as she walks by, Because, lest we forget, Utena is so cool. Oh, my God.
I mean, she is so cool. Oh, my God. Like, for real. Normally, just to quick aside, normally I would be like, ugh, eye roll. These girls are fangirling over this guy or whatever that doesn't deserve it. He's a complete, like, puffed up buffoon. But, like, Utena is a badass bitch. So, yes, I think she deserves it.
Like, the fact that she's a girl makes it cool. Like, that's...
I know.
This show's very much playing with gender and sexuality in a way that I think is so neat.
Exactly. Plus, it seems to be, like, a normal thing. Multiple people are like, Utena, you know, it's not like, oh, the one-off, like, person has a crush on her. Like, this is a common thing.
So, Utena gets to class. She's in class with Wakaba. Wakaba has her nose in a book. And I thought she was, like, possessed by, like, an evil spell or something.
Really?
Because she's, like, in a fugue state at first. Just sitting there looking at her book. Utena walks up and is like, hey, what's going on? How are you doing? And Wakaba is silent in response. So Utena's like, oh, okay. So she just walks on by. Then Wakaba turns around dramatically. And she says, I used to hate this book. It's a book about a girl who got over her love and found a second love. But now, I love this book. This is my favorite book. Oh my God, I'm the girl in this book. I've gotten over my love for that shitty guy. And I realize I truly am in love with you, Utena. You are my everything. You are my destined partner. Marry me, essentially. Because Wakaba's a crazy person.
She's so great.
And Utena's like, oh, not this shit again.
I love their dynamic. I'm not going to lie. They're so goofy.
They're weird as hell.
They are weird as hell.
They're an odd couple of people. It's probably a toxic friendship, I would say, for real. Like,
you think so?
I don't know. Because, okay, again, I'm doing it again. I'm acting as if these are, like, real people. They're not. They're archetypes.
Of course they are.
They're subversive archetypes, but they are archetypes.
I mean, Wakaba's like the squire, you know? She's like the star-stuck little squire who's following around Utena and, you know, being her, like, confidant and friend. And, like, Utena isn't exactly, like, she cares about Wakaba and she's friends with Wakaba, but she's like, oh, you're being so silly. Like, she's never gonna, like, return that same kind of affection in the same kind of exaggerated way, but, like, it's a silly dynamic.
And also, she doesn't know how to deal with emotional labor.
Yeah, Utena's like, oh, you're so weird.
Because, like, Wakaba would be like, okay, Wakaba, we gotta talk. We gotta have a conversation about the Seonji thing and what you've been through. Like, mm-hmm. You're not dealing with it healthily. But Utena is not that girl. She's not prepared. And also, she's supposed to be a middle schooler, so that makes perfect sense.
She's
not an adult woman, even though she looks like it.
I'm sorry, but I'm not gonna play into that. Like, she's... These are, like, high school, late teenagers, early young adult. Like, that you can't convince me otherwise. Like, I'm sorry.
Well, even high school kids, some are more mature than others. Sure. And some are, you know, more emotionally capable than others.
Sure.
But I think the majority of kids that age are not equipped to handle, oh, my friend has been tormented and...
You know, can I just say, like, even under the fantastical premise that we have and, like... The fact that this is, like, an impossible world full of, like, rose brides and Dios and magic and swords and shit. There's still, like, that element of, like, high school drama where things are more important to these kids than it seems like it should be in real life, you know? Like, there's that element of, like, oh, they're making it into a bigger deal than it is. Because when you're young, that's so important.
That would be pretty embarrassing to have your, like... personal love letter like that posted for the school to see. Like, that'd be pretty bad.
True, but you know, when stuff like that happens at the moment, it's like the most devastating thing. And honestly, like, Wakaba's taken this absolutely perfectly in stride. Like, she's not devastated at all, which I love that about her. She's not like, oh, a blubbering mess. But like, in 20 years when she's an adult person, she's gonna be like, oh, that was so silly, I can't believe I wrote a love letter, you know what I mean?
Really? I feel like that would get under her skin. If I was Wakaba, I'd be like, oh my God, that was so embarrassing.
I mean, yeah, but the fact that she recovered in one day is, like, ultra impressive.
Here we are talking about, like, the most minor character in the show.
I don't think she's as minor as, like, I think she's, that's the mark of a good writing. I mean, she is minor, but, like, she's interesting, too.
Speaking of interesting, we go to the magical elevator, which as it goes up into the sky, people just appear on it magically without it stopping. And it's the student council elevator, and it takes them to their sky platform area.
Of course.
Which is like their clubhouse or whatever.
Don't you have a sky platform area?
And they have their exposition to us. They like do a bunch of, as you know, blah, 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 blah kind of stuff. So we can learn some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure what we learned exactly, other than end of the world sends them letters, and it's a one-way communication, and they're being instructed on what to do. Now that Utena has taken over as, like, the champion or whatever, the implication is they all have to fight her.
I suppose this, whatever shadowy organization this is, again, at this point in the story, we have zero context for what this is. We don't know, is this an organization? Is this one person? Like, what the fuck is going on? What their motivations are? We have no idea. But it seems like they're allowing the status quo to be challenged in a way, because Utena's not part of this council, but they're like, well, this is interesting. Let's see what happens. Ho ho.
It's one girl and two guys. The girl's never heard this Utena person, so what the hell is this? There's another guy. I don't know any of their names.
The girl is Juri, and the blue-haired boy is Miki, I think.
I think he's voiced by James Carter Cathcart, actually.
Ooh, really?
Someone we may be familiar with. I don't
Perhaps.
Know.
Perhaps.
Wishing him well, actually.
Absolutely.
He's heard of Utena. She's a popular girl, so he's heard of her through the grapevine. And Toga has the hots for her.
Oh, God.
He's like, ooh, I like this Utena. So more on that later, I suppose, but not right now. Because apparently, in addition to having a sky platform and receiving mysterious letters from end of the world, the student council is tasked with making the room assignments.
Oh my god, what the fuck?
Which is like, do they manually go through and be like, okay, we're going to put this person with that person, and that person's going to be in this room? And like,
I guess. I mean, it seems like they're a bunch of like shit-stirring drama people. So they're like, let's just pair up so-and-so and see what happens.
Oh my god, it's like Gilmore Girls when Lorelai messes with the wedding
seating assignments. Arrangement.
And she's like, I'm going to make maximum drama. And she, like, messes around with it and, like, puts people, hate each other together. But then, like, sorry, I'm going to stop myself from going on Gilmore Girls rant.
Okay.
But basically, she gets caught, but the wedding planner is blamed and I think, like, fired or something.
That's so unfair.
And Laura, like, gets, and she's like, oh, okay.
She doesn't take responsibility.
Never suffers any consequences for her action.
Of course not.
Lorelai is a fascinating character, but that's not this show. That's a different show. Okay.
Join anyway. Us for Out of the Gilmore Girls, a Gilmore Girls
Ooh,
podcast.
Out of the Gazebo.
Ooh, okay.
So the student council has made the room assignments, and Wakaba's like, it's such bullshit that we're not in the same room. Oh, well. I don't know where they've been staying for the past couple days for these room assignments.
Okay, can I just ask that question? Because, like, out of nowhere, seemingly, they're like, okay, and by the way, you guys need dorm assignments. Well, what was happening, like, all the rest of the time? Like, is this the start of a new semester?
Yeah, the previous episode, I think, was the first day of the new semester.
Okay.
Because the teacher was chewing her out, being like, I guess you're not going to wear the uniform this year either, or whatever. But this is day two, so they should have room assignments. They should be somewhere. Where were they last night?
Yeah, and shouldn't they have room assignments prior to the semester starting? And also, do their dorm assignments change every year? Because if this isn't the first year she's been attending this academy, we know Utena's parents are deceased.
Right.
But assuming, like, all the other students just live normal lives with their families, like, there is a surrounding town.
Are they all locals?
I have no fucking clue.
All right. Don't, let's not.
I don't think
we're just
going to
point it out. That makes no sense. We pointed it out. They're not going to be in the same dorm. They're not even in the same building. And Utena is in a old building that no one's used in many years, like 10 years or so. So she walks over to this part of campus she's never been to before. It looks like a nice building.
Sure.
Because everything's so fancy-pantsy. She walks in. No one's there. She's like, hello? Hello? And then she walked into what I assumed was her room, which is like rotting away, like the ceiling has caved in and like there's rats and crap.
Oh my god, what is happening?
I guess they don't have the funds to fix up this building.
They have the funds to build like a sweeping fucking palette. Like what? Whatever.
Anyway, but then she goes to her actual room assignment, opens the door, And surprise! First of all, it's a bunk bed and not the single room she thought she had.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all, Anthy is there. Oh. And Anthy is like her maid. And it's like seemingly has transformed the room into perfectly clean overnight.
Okay.
That's the implication, right? Sure. It was a pigsty until Anthy came.
Yeah, I mean, it's an abandoned for a decade building, dilapidated. And she's like, sorry it took me so long. Here's your room, perfect and spotless.
Anthy's like, by the way, we're roommates. To attend a surprise, because she thought it was a single. Not that she's going to complain, she's just surprised. Anthy says, I'm your bride now, I'm the rose bride, and so I am subservient to you, and I serve you, and I'm just going to be around you now, and we have to live together. We're engaged now. Surprise!
Sure.
Utna is not understanding this, what's going on, but once again, she seems to not have as oversized a reaction as I would have to this situation.
I guess, like, honestly, at this point, I kind of feel like Utna's just kind of playing along. Like, she knows the student council. She knows there is a student council. I don't think she's aware. I think she just knows them as, like, the people who do dorm assignments and shit. Like, she doesn't know them as, like, being controlled by, like, a shadow organization called End of the World and that they, like, are involved in this rose bride shit. Like, she has no idea what that is. And I think she's just, like, humoring that. She's like, okay, I guess this is a ritual from, like, your weird little club.
This is some sort of hazing ritual.
Yeah, like, I think she's just like, okay.
She's like, Anthony's like just a weird girl, like.
I think she's just like, oh, okay, these are a bunch of, like, elitist people with, like, their elitist rich people rituals who, I guess they're just running around cosplaying as, like, princes and rose brides and whatever, like, sure. That sounds good. Nice for you. Because she, as we'll see, and, like, I know you'll explain it later, she's just kind of like, well, I'll just go along with this, but I don't really care, so I'll just, like, throw the match next time that happens. Like, whatever. It doesn't matter to me.
She is a little curious. She's like, Anthy, tell me more. What is going on? What the hell is happening? Anthony's like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Mysteries to me. I don't know. Which I don't believe her for a fucking second. There is an inner world to her that we are not seeing.
Oh, yet. Absolutely. Absolutely. She's so cagey and on purpose. But I wonder how much of that is, like, her just being, like, shy, or how is she trying to protect Utna from something?
There's, like, some sort of magical destiny bullshit.
Yeah, of course.
A horse. Of course. We don't know.
Nope.
We have no idea.
I don't know if you mentioned it before. Like, just for a quick little background, did you want to talk about, like, why they want to get into the castle? Like, when the student council was meeting, like, what they were talking about?
Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
Sorry to back up.
They were vague as hell. It was like, whoever wins gets to go into the castle and have the power to stage a revolution, whatever that means.
This, again,
Utna doesn't know that yet.
This is very much like Evangelion, again, with Gendo trying to bring about, oh my gosh, I can never remember. What is the big thing he wants to call?
Instrumentality.
Instrumentality, yeah. That's the feeling I got. That was totally the vibe. I'm like, revolution? Instrumentality?
I guess we're going to see what that is okay. In the future. I'm not sure who decides when the tournament's over, because it sounds like there's always a current champion, and at the moment that's Utna.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there's some sort of setup here. You know, Sayeonji is the starter villain. He's not the big bad. He's
of course not.
Probably like the weakest, lowest tier guy.
Mm-hmm.
I assume there's something complicated happening, but who knows? Who knows? Meanwhile, there's a mouse.
Is he a mouse or a monkey?
He looks like a monkey, but his name is Choo-Choo. And Choo-Choo, I think, is onomatopoeia for a mouse squeak.
He's like the size of like a water glass. Like, he's tiny. He's like a little monkey. He has an earring.
He's our mascot character.
I love Choo-Choo. I think Choo-Choo is adorable. I'm not really sure what he is or where he came from, but he's like a little purple monkey with an earring, and I'm here for it.
I mean, he's not like Luna from Sailor Moon. She's the exposition queen. She's the one who tells us everything that Sailor Moon needs to do. He's just there. He's just a cute little mascot. He's like Pen Pen.
He is like Pen Pen. Oh my god.
Maybe there's more to Choo-Choo. Ah, Choo-Choo, Pen Pen. But if there is, we don't know yet.
Maybe Choo-Choo plays a pivotal role in the future.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I always think of Kyubey from Madoka Magica.
I've never seen that, actually.
Oh, you would love it.
There's so many things I haven't seen.
It very much draws from this.
Oh, I'm sure.
Very much so.
Is it like magic? Like fantasy?
Yeah.
Oh, I would love it.
It's a Sailor Moon, like dark Sailor Moon, basically. Ooh.
Okay, well, maybe that can be our next thing. All right.
All right, maybe. But we gotta finish this first.
Okay, of course.
Okay, so Chuchu's here. I looked up Chuchu's voice actor, and I found the Japanese voice actor, who is Satomi Kurugi, who voiced, among others, Togepi.
Oh, no way.
From some show.
Oh, whoops. Why am I so surprised? I don't even know. What's a Togepi?
Pichu, specifically Pichu Little, a.k.a. Danny, whoever the hell that is.
Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell to me.
Sparky, who Richie owns.
Richie, who's that?
I don't know. Oh, to not know who Richie is, what a blessing. And Mew from Lucario and the Mystery of Mew, whatever the fuck that is.
Mew, hmm.
I was like, oh, okay, we got some bona fides here. We got a familiar sounding voice.
All right.
But surprise, then I found out Choo Choo was dubbed in English by someone else we know, Rachel Lillis.
Oh.
So I was like, well, that was a waste of my research time to find out the Japanese voice actor. But I mean, I was getting some jiggly, puffy vibes from Choo Choo's vocalizations.
There can only be so much vocal range with a small, cute, mystical creature. Like,
so she's going choo 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 choo, as opposed to like jiggly.
Yeah.
Jiggly.
Cute.
Ah, Rachel Lillis, such a talent.
Very.
We lost a great.
Such a shame.
So, Anthy, okay, no one else lives in this building. It's just the two of them, and they're one room. The three of them with Choo Choo. And. And Anthy's out on, like, the porch area talking to Sionji, who's arrived. And Sionji's like, Anthy, you're my rose bride. You should obey me. And Anthy's like, you're my classmate. I'm not your rose bride. Okay. Essentially.
I don't know. I kind of felt like she was, like, she's very passive, but, like, also I got a hint of, like, fuck off now. Goodbye. Like.
Yeah, she was saying, fuck you. As nicely as
I
she know, could.
I love her.
You're the very much a, I'm not listening to you.
She's like, I don't owe Leave you anything alone. Anymore.
Can we talk about the fact that she has to live with whoever the current reigning champion is? So the implications there with her and Seonji are not good.
No, absolutely not.
We're supposed to assume that, right?
There's an element with Anthy, like a transference of ownership almost. And I don't like to use that word, but like, honestly, it's kind of like a bond. There's an unspoken bond, like whomever wins the dueling championship title at the moment, this sort of unspoken bond happens where she's now bound to that person. And so her allegiance is basically to whomever. It's kind of like the fucking Elder Wand from Harry Potter. Whoever owns the wand, it's allegiant to that person. It doesn't give a shit about anything else. So.
But Anthy is not a piece of wood. She's a person.
In her rose bride capacity, she is kind of like an object.
Right, right. Which I'm assuming we're going to explore in depth over the next 37 episodes.
Of course.
But we're not there yet.
There's a magical something or other, shackle that something binds weird her. Is happening. Yeah, so anyway.
She doesn't say much, but what she does say, she's indicating to us and to the characters, she's like, I don't like Sionji. But Utna's great. I love her.
Yeah.
She's awesome. Like, she's, like, not able to conceal that for what little she does say. So, Seonji is, like, giving her shit, and Utna sees this go on. I don't know if he slaps her again.
He does.
He slaps her again.
He slaps her, and she, I think she falls down, but.
Oh, my God.
I could be wrong on that.
Ground.
I know he slaps her. He slaps her.
Okay.
Definitely.
So, Utna comes up and is like, enough of this shit. You need to leave. Choo Choo comes out and he's going to murder Seonji with a fork.
Get him.
Unfortunately, he's unsuccessful because Seonji just steps on him.
Oh my God. I was
awful.
Appalled. I was, ugh, what a bastard.
Seonji challenges Utna to a rematch and Utna's like, okay. But then he leaves and she's like, you know what? I don't know what the hell any of this is and I don't care. I'm going to lose. I'm not going to bother. Which I thought was so shitty of her. That means Anthy goes back to him.
Yeah. Can we talk about that for like a little bit?
She didn't seem to think about that. She didn't like connect the dots on that one.
I don't understand her. Okay, so we know from her background and just like as a foundational trait of who she is. She's very much like, I'm a prince. I want to be a prince. I want to be like a knight in shining armor to a princess or somebody who needs me or whatever. Anthy is that person, clearly.
Very literally.
Very literally. But, like, in the span of, like, one episode, she's like, yeah, Sionji is an abusive motherfucker. We hate him. But, like, I don't really want to play along with this Rose Bride cosplay shit that you're doing. So, like, I'll just throw the match on purpose. Good luck, Anthy. That is weird. Why would she not help Anthy? Mm. Am I missing something?
I'm assuming there's more to come on that front.
Okay.
We'll find out.
It's so weird. All right.
So she doesn't even, like, seem to consider that.
Oh, sorry. The other thing I wanted to add was she does say specifically to Anthy's face, which, like you said, was shitty, because she basically tells Anthy, yeah, so the first time I didn't fight it for you, I fought it for Wakaba's honor. Like, the duel.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, I don't care about the Rose Bride.
Yeah.
She says right in front of the Rose Bride.
She says exactly to her face. I was like, Utna, what?
Which, okay, is fair. She didn't know any of this going on.
Well, not the first time.
No, not the first time.
But the fact that she would turn around, like, after seeing part of this, like, in the Anthy's treatment by Sionji, and then the fact that she would turn around and say, yeah, I don't really care about this Rose Bride thing. Good luck. And then Anthy's like, whatever you wish, Utna. Oh, my God. It just breaks my heart for Anthy. I'm sorry.
Makes you wonder if she's, like, heartbroken by this little exchange, Anthy, but she's not showing it.
I don't know. She keeps everything very close inside, like.
Oh, she's so interesting. I gotta know more.
Oh my God, I know.
The people who have watched this show all the way through are like, y'all are so stupid.
I know. There's probably a bigger reason here, but we only can do what we can with the information we have.
That's true. So the shadow puppets are back. They're cowgirls now. Okay. They come before the stair sequence. We get the proper stair sequence now with Utna walking up the stairs. The best part of every episode, as far as I'm concerned.
Did the song change?
I think it's the same song.
Same song? Okay.
I think the fight song is different between the two episodes, but okay. I could be wrong.
Yeah, or maybe that's what I'm thinking, the fight song.
Yeah, but the Sarah song, I think, is consistent.
Okay.
Only this time, we see Anthy, and she's, like, waving her arms around, and as she does, it makes, like, some sort of decoration appear on Utna's outfit.
Oh.
Like, the gold trim. Gets her, like, a skirt.
Yeah, she's got more of a regal outfit. Like, same kind of uniform, but, like, she gets the little shoulder pauldron thingies. She gets, like, the gold cords and, like, kind of this regalia thing going on and, like, the ruffled skirt. It's the magical girl transformation, like Sailor Moon.
I thought of Sailor Moon, and I thought of how she goes from a girl wearing a schoolgirl outfit, a sailor outfit, and then she transforms, and now she's a girl wearing a schoolgirl sailor outfit.
Yeah. It's her outfit, but better.
Yeah, exactly. She goes from, like, a full-length skirt to a short skirt.
Yeah. Hooray!
Everyone recognizes Utna. She doesn't have a secret identity, so it's none of that nonsense.
No.
Although, she does not seem very surprised by the fact that her wardrobe is changing as she walks up these stairs. So, whatever.
She's playing along. I'll give her that.
So, now she is able to draw the Sword of Dios from Anthy's glowing orb.
Her cleavage area.
And we fight again. We have a rematch. The song is different. And the song was wild.
I know. The song was insane.
It was like geological eras of the earth.
I thought that was fucking badass.
It was so cool. It was so weird. They were like putting in these terms into like regular lyrics.
So I was watching the fight sequence, obviously. And I was trying to like also read along to the subtitle caption, you know, because the Japanese words with the English subtitles, but like it was talking about, like you said, the geological eras. It was like ammonite, blah blah blah, all this stuff, like different creatures.
Yeah, they were like throwing out like ancient life forms.
Yeah, and I was like, this is such an epic saga. Like the whole vibe was unlike anything I've ever experienced. Because usually when you're in like an anime fight scene, it's like, go, go for the power of love, la, 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 like something ridiculous.
Let's fighting love,
you know, or something where it's kind of silly. But this one was like, la, 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 geographical eras of time, like
Jurassic, Triassic, Cretaceous.
It was crazy.
So weird, but so good. She beat Sayonji, of course. Because why wouldn't she?
At one point, she's like considering. You skipped over something really important.
I did?
Yeah. How she wins?
Oh, duh, duh. Jesus. I like, didn't even take notes on it.
Holy shit.
I was like, fuck the fighting. I gotta pay attention to these lyrics.
Oh my God, no.
She's gonna throw the fight. Let Anthy suffer.
God.
But a magical sensation happens where a floating apparition appears from the upside down castle. It's the prince. He's back. And he possesses her, and there's, like, a weird moment where, like, flower ornamentation appears over her as he possesses her.
Yeah.
I was like, are we censoring some sexual imagery here? What's going on?
I don't know if that's the case, but, like, Toga is spying on her as he does, apparently. he's seeing this happen. So it's not like something that's happening in her own mind's eye or whatever, because he's like, oh, what?
Oh, he physically sees the prince fly down.
I think so, yeah. Because okay. He's like, he speculates, he's like, was that the power of Dios? Like, he can see it.
Is Dios the prince?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, because I know Dios means God.
Well, they said the sword of Dios in the last thing, and then
yeah,
he said, is that the power of Dios?
So he's a god.
It seems like some kind of something or other.
Some sort of entity. Okay, we'll find out.
Okay.
But in the meantime, she gets possessed by the prince character. She's not fucking around anymore. She's going to win now. Mm-hmm. So she wins. And Anthy is pleased that Utena won. Hooray. So they go back to their little dorm area. And Choo-Choo is fucking around with some strawberry shortcake, like throwing it around to Utena's amusement. And Anthy comes into the kitchen and she's like, oh, thank you. But Utena says, I didn't do it for you. I did it for Choo-Choo. I don't want Choo-Choo to be mistreated by that guy.
What the fuck? I'm sorry.
She's so hot and cold.
Utena, what the
fuck? I'm looking forward to their relationship and seeing what's happening here.
Yeah, this is... I guess I don't know what I expected out of her, but, like, not the blatant... I didn't do it for you. I did it for this monkey thing.
She's in denial about it. She's like, I didn't do it for you, silly girl.
Maybe she doesn't want to confront her emotions. Like, maybe she's trying to just downplay her secret feelings that she doesn't even know she has yet. I don't know. I can't speculate.
What is their relationship? Because, like, they're going to get together.
Yeah.
The opening...
Seems like it.
Indicates it's not, yeah. Well, it looks like it's going to be a journey before we get there.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. How exciting.
Fuck Pokemon. We're not doing Pokemon anymore. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
All right. I'm dropping the facade. All right. April Fools.
Happy April Fools, guys. Oh, no. Wait. We can't do the April Fools thing yet. We have to do our MVP LVP first.
Oh, okay. 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 MVP LVP in quote.
Time for that. Who's first?
Let's flip the Choo-Choo coin, which is definitely not a Dragonite coin. Tails, you go first.
All right. My MVP is going to be, okay, you know what? This is probably going to be controversial because I know some stuff about what happens in the future episodes. So,
from the manga?
Yeah, just from reading, like reading a synopsis and stuff. Don't come at me. I'm just basing my understanding of this off of this one episode in this one moment. This is what my MVP is. I'm going to give my MVP to the spirit of Dios.
Supposedly. Oh, you know something about Dios, something. Do you?
Yes, I do.
Ooh, you were hinting at that. I totally missed it.
I do know something. So just...
All right, don't tell me. I don't want to know.
I'm not going to say anything, but just keep in mind that I'm only basing my MVP off of this one moment isolated from all other aspects of this character because reasons.
Okay. Okay.
And I say that because without the spirit of Dios, Utena would have thrown the match and left Anthy to her horrible fate with Sionji. So thank you, Spectre of Dios, for kicking Utena in the butt and making her win, because...
So he is Dios. That is his name.
Not... Yes and no. I don't want to say anything.
Can call him Dios, and it's not incorrect. Got it.
I think so. I could be wrong on that part. Like I said, I don't remember exactly, but I'm going to just call him Dios for the lack of another way to call him, so... Anyway, so that's MVP. My LVP is going to be... We gave it to Sionji last time, so he's kind of a boring character. I'm going to give it to the end of the world, because what the fuck?
Okay.
What the fuck? I don't know.
Who are you, end of the world? What's going on people? There?
This one-way letter secret society bullshit that they're doing and, like, wanting to bring about a revolution and not really even knowing what that means, it seems like. So, questionable. I'm not really sure. Don't know enough about you, so LVP. My quote is, I only have one, and you kind of said part of it before, but it's the only one I have. When Wakaba is reading her book and declaring her love for Utena at the beginning, she says about her book titled The Magnolia Waltz, which I looked up because I was like, is this like a real book? And I couldn't find anything, so sorry.
I did the same thing.
Yeah, sorry, it's not based on anything. There's
nothing. It's not a thing. No. It's not real.
Anyway, she says, always, she's always loved this guy. But after she's rejected, the next day she gets over it. Another man appears and she falls for him. When I read this before, I thought this was the lamest, stupidest book I'd ever read. And I've read some pretty lame ones. Now I think it's the greatest. I don't know. It's a good metaphor for her situation. I think, like, she thought it was stupid before. Because she's like, how could she just get over her love for this, like, terrible guy so quickly? But, like, after it happened to her, she's like, you know what? It was silly for me to be all torn up about Seonji. So now I appreciate that second guy coming in and sweeping my love away from that. And I love you, Utena. Like, Wakaba's great. I hope we see more of her.
I hope we do, too. Because she's the only one who's, like, a teenager
at this point. Exactly.
She's the only one who has, like, the teen logic going on.
She's a normal person. She's not concerned with this, like, rose bride end of the world shit. Just a normal girl doing her normal girl thing.
My MVP is going to be Choo-Choo.
Aww.
I don't know what the hell Choo-Choo is, but Choo-Choo's kind of cute.
Sure.
And he tried to murder Seonji with a fork, so that was fun. And my LVP is going to be Seonji because he stepped on Choo-Choo.
I know.
And slapping Anthony, of course. That what needs to be said.
You know what? I'm going to give Utena honorary LVP just for this one scene because she does not stand up for Choo-Choo or say anything about him stepping on him.
Poor Choo-Choo.
Poor Choo-Choo.
I like how we're more invested in Choo-Choo than Anthony. Anyway, I got hope for you, Anthony. I think you're going to really be a cool one.
Yeah, she's got to come into her own. Also, Choo-Choo's like a half a foot tall and like a little creature who's helpless, so.
Yeah, yeah. My quote, I'm going to go with Toga when he sees the Dios Prince possession sequence happen. He says, what was that? Or no, he emphasizes that. What was that?
He doesn't even know.
And I'm like, same. What was that? Tell me more. I want to know.
That's what they're questioning, even though like a floating phantom castle is like spinning around above their heads. And like, that's the weirdest thing.
They're used to that shit.
All right. Sure. Okay, is that all? Any final thoughts on Revolutionary Girl Utena, episode 1 and 2?
Like, we're actually going to finish this. Like, we're actually watching this, right? You and me?
Of course.
Okay, great. We'll do it. We'll watch this and White Lotus.
Okay, perfect. Love that. Any other thoughts?
I apologize for talking shit about you, Pokemon. We love you.
Yeah, so if it isn't clear, happy April Fools!
We do this every year. This is kind of an oddball choice.
This is a weird one, but we love it.
The Rachel Lillis connection helps.
Yeah.
And it's the same year, 1997.
Exactly. Same era. We love it. So we hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. Of course, we will be back to our regularly scheduled Pokemon programming next week. So stay tuned, guys. What do we have for you next week, Austin?
A Poached Ego and Trees a Crowd, if I remember correctly.
I don't know what those episodes are at all, so I'll be pleasantly surprised, I'm sure, when we get there. All right, guys. Well, like we said, we hope you enjoyed this fun April Fool's episode. Revolutionary Girl Utena was such a trip. We loved it. I think it's definitely worth like a watch through. But yeah, if you want to get in touch with us and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other episodes we have, you can get in touch with us at outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. Again, outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. We also have a Blue Sky you can follow us at outofthedryingpan. And we also have our Instagram, outofthedryingpan is our handle there as well. And we also have our Patreon. If you like what we do and want to support us, we would super appreciate any support you can offer. Check us out over there. Our link is in the description. We have all kinds of cool bonus content, so check that out. As always, we want to say thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week as the journey continues.